Hey, yo, listen, it's going down just like this.
Spread the word and let your voice be heard. It's Praise in the City with Tiffany Bacon on Praise 103.9, Philadelphia's inspiration station.
And a very good Saturday morning to you. Welcome to today's edition of Praise in the City. Thank you so much for checking us sister out. I'm Tiffany Bacon. I am your host. And today we're going to talk about a topic that can be very sensitive, but it is extremely important that we continue to have dialogue about this subject. And the subject is AIDS. Now, lately in the news, people have been, oh my gee, about Ebola. And granted, Ebola is a monster. That is definitely something you don't want to play with. We do need to be aware. We don't need to be paranoid, amen, but we do need to be aware of what's going on. But let's not overshadow the fact that HIV has been around for many, many years. Many people have passed away and are still passing away from the virus, which causes AIDS. And we're going to be talking about that, why it's important to stay on top of the information and why there are still more stories about the people who have been suffering with HIV and AIDS, why their stories need to be told. So joining me in the studio, two good friends who are awesome, awesome men.
They are
directors of a play called You Gotta Eat Dirt Before You Die. It's a gripping family drama that is coming to Philadelphia in December. And it's written by Dr. Kamika Williams-Witherspoon, who is a professor at my alma mater, Temple University.
That's right.
And these two gentlemen are driving the ship that is You Gotta Eat Dirt Before You Die. Welcome, Malcolm and Terrell. Guys, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. It's such a pleasure to be here. Thank
you. Yes. So it's Malcolm Kenyatta and Terrell Green. You know, I'm so used to saying Malcolm and Terrell as if everybody knows exactly who
we just
you
do
are.
The first name thing.
You know,
it's all good. But thank you, guys. I appreciate you coming in. First and foremost, let's talk about why it's so important to tell stories about those who are living with and dying with HIV, the virus that causes AIDS.
I think you hit the nail right on the head in your lead up to this conversation. Thank you again for having us here. HIV and AIDS has been with us for, I think we're looking at over 30 years now. And I think because it's been so long, because there have been so many advances, Terrell had an opportunity to go to an event yesterday where they've now created this pill that can basically help you to not get
it's
HIV. This preventative pill. And I think a lot of those steps, while they're very positive, they help us to forget that in Philadelphia, from last year, the rate of new infections actually increased 5%, actually didn't go down. Mm-hmm. And when you look at those numbers and you dig in a little deeper and you see that it's people just like us, just in our age range from 18 to 24, one in four of the new infections are within that age range. So that's why doing this work was so important.
Yeah. I think it's important to tell these stories and to talk about HIV and AIDS because there's so many other conversations that are pocketed within that, whether it be we can evaluate the healthcare system that we operate within America because the leading numbers of HIV and AIDS are in America. They're in Africa, excuse me. But in terms of it being a sexually transmitted disease, and in that regard, the numbers are in America. And I think it also is we can view socioeconomic groups, certain numbers are higher in certain demographics. So I think the stories are important because it allows other conversations to be opened in a general public space like a theater.
And it's so important how art also informs people. So it's not just, you know, for entertainment's sake. Also, art also is an informative platform, which is great. When you think about HIV and AIDS and the conversations that are or are not occurring in the African-American community in particular, what are some of the things that distress you about people's current knowledge of the disease and the condition? Because I still hear people using AIDS and HIV interchangeably as if they are the same thing.
I think there's a fear of the a fear of the medical profession at some level of being I think the conversations aren't being had because there is a fear of having of going to your doctor and saying, "Hi, I could potentially be a gay man that's having a relationship with another man, or I could be a person,
a married woman,
or a married woman
in a monogamous marriage,
right? Or I could be a person living in the closet, you know, afraid to come out, you know. So I'm not going to take the right measures to ensure myself that I am living the healthiest life. I'm not sure if I'm answering the question.
Well, yeah, I'm really more asking like, what are some of the things that you hear other people saying in relationship to HIV and AIDS that distress you in terms of how long it's been around, how long we've been knowing about it, the different phases of care and prevention even, and to still hear some level of ignorance to HIV and AIDS, including the fact that some people refer to them as the same thing interchangeably, and they're not exactly the same thing.
Yeah, I think a little bit of what I heard Terrell saying is that one of the things that probably distresses us the most in the conversations that we have is the stigma around testing, which is a little bit of what I think I heard you saying, and the stigma around sexuality specifically in the gay community.
That's a gay disease.
And there is still that mindset that this is a gay disease, that this is...
Or black man disease, black gay man disease. Yeah,
exactly. And when I hear people saying that this is still not that this isn't a problem anymore, you know, is there something else that maybe you guys could have, you know, done a show about, you know, maybe Ebola or whatever it is? And I think whenever there's fear around something, there's always going to be ignorance,
right?
Because a lot of times people don't want to know. People don't want to go to the doctor and have that conversation.
Right.
That was a part of the reason why we're going to have that free testing at all the events to make sure that people know what's going on, that they get the information that they need, and we start to break down some of these barriers around the disease, which is this mindset around sexuality, around... and around the stigma that comes along with people who have tested positive.
Right. I think also too, to just move it away from it being just a gay topic or gay issue. I think for me, hearing diseases like HIV and AIDS or Ebola, they've become, you know, simultaneous with Africa, we're not really discussing the health system that is set up in Africa. We're not discussing, you know, the indoctrination that these diseases allows other countries to bring into to Africa. You know, we're not discussing the real issues as well of why these diseases can have successful healing rates in America, but not necessarily in Africa. We're not discussing, you know.
Yeah, that sounds like, and I know for a fact is, a loaded conversation that needs, you know, 3 or 4 hours just to talk about healthcare and what's going on in Africa and how it relates to here and people's thoughts about closing borders and all of that. You know, same thing was going on when HIV and AIDS, you know, first, quote unquote, was discovered, you know, first started affecting a great number of people, especially here in the United States. So, you know, that is a very in-depth conversation that needs to be had. But in terms of the issues that are related to the work that you're doing with this production, which I prefaced as being a family drama, talk about, without giving away the story, of course.
Yeah, you can't give away too much.
Don't give away the story. But what is it about this drama that is unique? What are some of the things that are covered? And why is it important to discuss those things?
Well, the drama does, you know, obviously talk about HIV, but more AIDS specifically. But that's not the only health issue that's in the show. There's also somebody in the show who is dealing with cancer as well. So the show is really about how families deal with loss, how families deal with disease, and how families in a lot of ways, specifically the African American family, how we do look at sexuality, because that does play a role.
Yeah. I think too, in my opinion, I think what I've learned from working on this play is to think of the word disease is for a situation to kind of be, you know, exactly that, uneasy, mm-hmm. and not at ease.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that is the family drama that we're looking at, literally diseases being cancer and AIDS in this show. But then there is an element that is just because of the so many different issues that we're covering, like Malcolm was just speaking of sexuality and, mm-hmm. and family drama and issues of the past, you know, the whole play has this unease that I think a lot of families experience in several different forms.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Because, you know, every family has their backyard, as mm-hmm, I like to say.
Mm-hmm.
There's a
graveyard in every basement
yes,
of everything.
Yes, you know,
and in this show, we really get into
the basement.
Exactly. Like, we're gonna get really, really deep. And what I love about it is the way it's written. That's what drew us to it in the beginning. The way it's written, this isn't a play that you can feel disconnected from.
Right.
I don't think you can come into this place and say, well, I don't have anybody in my family who has AIDS or has cancer. This isn't the show for me. I think what Tara was talking about, that dis-ease, those family fights, those mm-hmm. that sibling uh-huh. rivalry, all those different things happens in all of our families. And mm-hmm. I read it and Terrell read it and we're like, oh my God, that a little bit of that happened in my life.
Yeah,
a little
right.
bit of that happened.
Because I was describing this play to someone, you know, and I was focusing it around, oh, the mother has cancer and, you know, the lover is dying of AIDS. And they said, well, this definitely isn't a comedy. And I said, no. But what it is it's, at the ending, it's a very real story. Mm-hmm. You know, I think the ending speaks to that. If you have a brother or a sister or a cousin or a best friend, you'll be able to be like, I've been in a relationship
mm-hmm.
like this.
Mm-hmm. If you're just tuning in, loving the commentary here with my guests in studio. If you're just tuning in, it's Praise in the City on Praise 103.9 FM. If you've listened to my program long enough, you know we provide some provocative topics, some provocative information on all sorts of subjects. And it's important that you really check this out today, because one of the things I know for a fact, there are certain topics we cannot touch without fever pitch conversations that follow. It's hard to have a conversation that's kind of calm, whether it's dealing with sexuality, whether it's dealing with disease, whether it's dealing with prejudice, whatever the prejudice may be, especially in our religious community, especially in the Christian community. I really want to provide an opportunity for you to hear different stories and, since you know I love the arts, for you to check out an artistic work that touches on some things that maybe you don't talk about, but maybe you should have a roundtable discussion with your family to see, like, what's going on, do a temperature check and things like that. So hopefully you are enjoying the conversation thus far. My special guests in studio are Malcolm and Terrell. They are the directors of a new work. It's called You Gotta Eat Dirt Before You Die. It's coming to Philadelphia in December. We definitely want you to check it out. We'll hear more information about it. The underlying stories, though, as you mentioned, this family is dealing with a lot.
Oh my God.
This family is dealing with disease, two types of very serious illnesses. Cancer is horrible. I just recently lost a friend to cancer, and I've lost several people recently to cancer. Nobody ever wants to hear that word. When it comes to HIV and AIDS, nobody ever wants to hear that either when they go get their checkup or go get tested or what have you. No one wants to hear that. And the fact that no one wants to hear it, even fewer people seem to want to discuss it. So what is it that you all as directors want people to walk away with when they see this production or any production dealing with a subject as heavy as this?
I want especially, you know, the African-American community, and especially, you know, filled the Holy Ghost community, to know that, like, these are conversations that are tough to have, but they have to be had. And that is what I love about the play and the way it's written, is it's kind of in your face there.
Mm-hmm.
And you're forced to look at all these things and to reflect on your own family, your own background. And every time I read it and every time we look at, you know, blocking a scene or whatever it is, it's like, oh my gosh, like this is really touching on something. And I think it is going to spark conversations for people to have later. So if maybe you don't know how to start that conversation, this is a great place to go. And then you can couch everything in, you know what that character did? You know, I'm not saying it's somebody in our family, but maybe it is, you know?
I think from a design and creative side, I just want people to walk away and know that we are not exempt from anything happening to us or our family structure. So I think that we just should love. I think that's the core of any religious practice is love and showing love.
And the core of family.
The core of family is love. And I know just from doing this work and talking to a lot of people who have experienced things similar to what's going on in this play is that I think if they've had just a little bit of love, it would have been a little bit easier for them.
So what then to you is love? Because people see love in different, from different lenses. You know, some people have 20/20 vision, some people have 20/30, some people have 60/50,
you know,
whatever the scale may be, you know. So what then is love in your definition?
I think love is allowing yourself to possibly to be angry at someone, but agape, to love in spite of, to be upset with someone. To I've learned it's not about allowing making people accept who you are, but about meeting them where they are. You know, so I think that's what love is, meeting someone where they are at.
Malcolm, what do you think?
Yeah, I think, you know, love covers a multitude of faults, and I think I'm in the same kind of vein with Terrell. Love is that thing that allows, you know, the characters in this drama to have all these issues that they're dealing with, but still, at the end of the day, you know, I think there are definitely some moments where they all come together and say, like, this is our family, this is what we have, and we need to make the best out of it and to encourage each other in it. And that's what these characters do. And that's what I think it's all about in general, saying like, you are someone that I have all these relationships, even if it's your family, you know, once you get a certain age, you have to decide whether or not you want to have those relationships. And I think, you know, love is about making that decision that whatever you do, however crazy you are, you know, I'm going to kind of hopefully be able to see past a little bit of that. And allow it to cover some of those things and still be there, you know, when it's necessary.
Is there a lesson in forgiveness here? And if so, what does that look like?
I think so. I think the reality of it is that sometimes forgiveness is saying goodbye, you know, and it can be forgiveness for yourself. Forgiveness to someone else, forgiveness to a situation that happened, but it may be letting it go and having to grieve it, but knowing that goodbye isn't everything that's down isn't dead. You know, that doesn't mean that it's gone.
Okay. What isn't gone is this discussion. We're going to come back and actually talk a little bit more about HIV and STD. I know you guys know about the numbers here. And I'm sorry, not just STDs, really HIV and AIDS in particular. STDs, that's some other work that I do. We can talk about that later. And honey, that's heavy. And it's heavy in Philadelphia in particular among our teens. For those who don't know, I've done shows on this before. The STD numbers in Philadelphia are really out of pocket for our teens.
Like staggering.
Yeah, for our teens.
I didn't even know they were having sex this young. But
well, unfortunately, yeah, and different depending on what piece of data you're looking at, there are young people as young as 11 who are engaging and I'm telling you this because this is work that I do when I'm not here at the radio station or on somebody's stage. This is work that I do as well, it is very disheartening to know that an 11-year-old would be diagnosed with any kind of STD. But unfortunately, it's happening, and it is in the group of conversations that folks don't want to have. I know I am not a parent, But I know parents don't want to have that conversation. No. How do you respond if you find out, one, your child is having sex, two, that they're not only are they having sex, they have an STD. And what if the STD is HIV?
Well, bring them to the show, I told you.
That's a hard conversation.
That is a tough conversation. I can't believe that.
Last night I was at an event where they were discussing with the they were discussing the preventative measures that can be taken. This new preventive pill that is out called PrEP. This is with the Black Gay Men's Leadership Council. The moderator said of the panel, he said, you know, you have to be ready for whatever reaction that is going to happen, you know, on both sides, the person who is testing positive and the person who is there with that person. You have to be ready and for both reactions and allow them to happen. And I couldn't imagine having a child, anyone, you know, having that experience with anyone.
It's real.
Yeah,
it's real. And I know we here in the faith community, it's particularly tough if you're a parent and you are working really hard to raise your child in a way where they'll make different decisions. Just okay, if you say don't have sex until you're married, a lot of people can't stick to that. And to know if you have a child that might actually make the decision not to stick to that, what then do you do? What then do you do? How do you have the discussion? How do you respond when you have to take your child to the clinic and they have an STD? Like just even dealing with teens, those who are older, 15, 16, 17, that's the age group that I mostly work with. That's hard enough to know that they have had a moment or two on the couch, on the chair, in the office with a positive result. But I can only imagine if that result is HIV, what then happens to that person?
You are there for them. You are there for them just like if they were diagnosed with anything else. And I think that that is a part of the stigma, right? That if I test positive, obviously your life has changed, but a lot of times there's that fear that I'm going to lose everyone I love and care about. So not only have I got this, you know, this difficult diagnosis, but now I don't even really have a support system to help me through that time. And I think the answer is you're there for them. You're there for them just like if they have cancer or anything else. And I think that there is a stigma around STDs and HIVs in general, that if you test positive, it's somehow your fault. And people have a lot less empathy.
Right. I think that message is great, that you're there for them and letting them know, especially if it is a family that's coming from a religious faith background, that their body is a temple. And I think that they may have ended up in this position because they didn't know that about their body. They had some self-esteem issues or they're trying to fill some sort of void that they're not getting within themselves and knowing that God is within them. You know, and that every time that they give themselves up, they're giving up that piece of them, you know. But also that if they were to test positive, you know, I think that life is not over. Life is definitely not over. And that Jesus did not cast that stone, you know, that life, there is a tomorrow.
So we want to talk some more about HIV, AIDS, stigma, and this awesome play that's coming to Philadelphia called You Gotta Eat Dirt Before You Die. We don't want you to touch that dial. More great conversation on Praise in the City returns right after this.
You're listening to Praise in the City with Tiffany Bacon on Praise 103.9, Philadelphia's inspiration station. Now back to Praise in the City with Tiffany Bacon on Praise 103.9, Philadelphia's inspiration station.
Welcome back. We're in the second half of today's edition of Praise in the City. We are talking about HIV and AIDS and a very, very good family drama called You Gotta Eat Dirt Before You Die. It's written by Temple University professor Dr. Kamika Williams-Witherspoon. It's debuting in Philadelphia in December. And we have the directors of the show, Malcolm and Terrell, here in the studio with us. We've been having an awesome, awesome time and awesome discussion. There are so many ways the topic can go, but because I only have an hour, it's hard for me to really dig but so deep. Mm-hmm. So I hate to say we're going to keep it surface, but we're going to touch on certain aspects of what all of this is about and not go as deep as we could. Like I said, I would hate to tip this boat and then we can't even get in the water. We're just kind of hanging on the side. But as we left off the conversation, we were just talking about, you know, how do you respond to someone, especially a youth, who is tested positive for HIV? And I know when you are presenting the play, there is not just the performance, there is a whole education piece around it. There are panels and HIV testing. Can you just explain why it's important for all people who have been sexually active to be tested? Even if you haven't been sexually active in a long time, if you've never been tested and you have ever been sexually active, why it is important to be tested for HIV?
I think it's like when someone spends $40,000 on a car, you know, every year they're going to go get their car inspected mm-hmm. for everything so that it can take them wherever it needs to go, mm-hmm. you know. Because they've spent $40,000 on it, right? Mm-hmm. But this is our life, you know, and we need our bodies to take us everywhere, you mm-hmm. know? And I think that is a general part of health. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what I took away from the panel I was at last night, that I removed it from being just a sexual thing to it being a health and wellness matter. Mm-hmm. So I think I used that car analogy to show that, you know, you're getting your car tested for everything, mm-hmm. you know, and then you're getting it fixed. And then if you don't agree with that mechanic, you're going to mm-hmm. go to another mechanic and try to get the best care. Solution. Yeah, mm-hmm. the best care for your car. And I think it should be the same way with your body.
And why do you think, before you answer, Malcolm, why do you think people are really resistant to that test? First and foremost, I will state that some people misunderstand that when they go to the doctor and they just get a full screening, that they automatically get tested for HIV, and that's not necessarily that's not necessarily true. You actually have to request that mm-hmm. when you go to the doctor. You have to say, yes, I would like to be tested for HIV and blah, say, blah, say, blah, say, blah, whatever else you want to get tested. I just wanted to throw that out there before you responded.
No, and that's... perfect, because that's definitely the way I wanted to take the question. I think what we talked about a little bit before mm-hmm. is it is that fear of once I know, there is no going back and my life is going to change. Mm-hmm. But Terrell and I had a chance to talk about this as well, is your life is going to change, but the technology and the science behind what they've been able to do is they will at some point have a cure for this. I do mm-hmm. believe.
If well, there yeah, isn't Temple one already is actually on the on the cutting
always,
edge.
Yeah,
yeah,
they were
so
able
talk about
to destroy. They were able to destroy the HIV virus in a single human cell, and mm-hmm. they were able to target it without killing the entire mm-hmm. killing the entire cell. And I think that is important to know, that once you get this test, that isn't it. It's not a death sentence. Mm-hmm. It used to be, you know, a cocktail that you used to have to take. Mm-hmm.
And that
pill.
Cocktail, he's not talking about, you know, liquor. Listen, he's talking about
exactly
a set of drugs.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Now there is just one pill that you need to take, you know, mm-hmm. the same way maybe if you are prone to heart attacks, maybe you take an aspirin or whatever it is.
Right.
It's one pill, but as Terrell was saying, it's important to know what's happening with your body.
I think, too, you know, just in general, if you're sexually active, and especially if you practice unsafe sex, mm-hmm. You know, in general, I think you should be getting tested, you know, but if you're practicing, you know, unsafe sex, you should get tested. And just because you get tested doesn't mean you then go and not use a condom. Mm-hmm. I think prevention is just like, you know, taking vitamin C mm-hmm. when you think you're getting a cold, you know, mm-hmm. it's all mm-hmm. in the prevention.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So let's take it from people who feel they don't need to get tested and what stigma they may drum up about people who do. How do you combat that type of stigma or any stigma surrounding HIV and the testing itself?
Well, I think that we just have to find interesting ways to reach people. Mm-hmm. And that is why, you know, we could have just done the panel that you brought up or just had a testing event or something. But art changes lives. And when somebody's looking at a play or hearing a song or whatever it is, it allows you in that moment to view the issue in a totally different way. And then we're able to slide in that message. And I think that that's what we have to do. I think there was an example of, I'm not sure who the artist was. I want to say the artist was Wale, but they had a concert where there were no tickets. There were no ticket sales. It's just everybody had to get tested before going into the concert, and that was the way. So that's
hip-hop for HIV.
Hip-hop for HIV, okay. So that's an awesome example of the type of work that I think is going to need to be done to combat this disease in the 21st century and to really hit people where they are. We're in a media-driven, social media-driven world, and we have to find ways to connect with that demographic because they are the ones that are being affected. And we found that doing events like this hopefully can help to spur some of that.
I think too, people who necessarily wouldn't go to get tested, what they with their thoughts around testing is people who are getting tested are these promiscuous, you know, people. And and it's not that. I think the people who are getting regularly tested are the people who are aware of their health and really care about their whole health, you know, sexually, physically, mentally, you know, and spiritually.
So let's also talk about, you know, because the heavy emphasis on HIV is it being a sexually transmitted disease, which is, you know, its main mode of transmission for a lot of situations. But there are only four body fluids that transmit HIV. That is breast milk, vaginal secretions, semen, and blood being the most infectious. So that means that people should be concerned about other things like perhaps getting tattoos. If you are.
Exactly. Or people who get them, like my friend around the way is doing it. I'm just always like,
Right. Yeah. If you have youth or if you yourself are young in spirit and you're like, hey, I want to get a tattoo, I might go to a tattoo party. There's danger in that because that is a needle that is connecting with a person's skin and blood is often in the needle, although it might be microscopic. You know, you might not see a lot of it, but there is a risk there. And I think that we have overshadowed that mode of potential transmission and just focusing on the sex and what people are or aren't doing and what they should or should not be doing instead of looking at the fact that, hey, there's blood here. So when we're talking about HIV transmission and awareness, we also need to talk about these other things too. While, you know, folks have cleaned up the whole blood transfusion thing, like in the early 80s, people were getting it through blood transfusions. Well, folks have cleaned that up now, so you don't have that happening as often. But there's now this business with everyone being extra hype about tattoos and tattoo parties. What do you say to that? To someone who may not have thought of that? And what should they then keep in their mind if they have a youth who wants to go to a tattoo party or tattoo parlor?
I don't have, you know, I have a couple of myself, so I don't know if I'm anti-tattoo parlor. So if you are young or young in spirit, I think, you know, go ahead, you know, do what you have to do. But I think you're right, especially around the tattoo parties. When you're going somewhere and you're getting a tattoo, you need to make sure that that needle that they're taking out is coming straight out of a fresh package. This isn't something that they're reusing, that the person is licensed and trained and they know the health risks involved with doing a procedure like that. And there are also, you know, obviously other ways that people can get it, you know, drug use and all types of other.
Intravenous drug use is very, you know, which is still happening, which is still an issue in our community and not just ours in the Black community, but in urban communities, in big cities, small towns, there's a lot of drug use, intravenous as well. So those are things that we do need to keep in mind. I feel like we heard so much about it in the 80s and 90s and not nearly as much about those aspects of it. as we got into the new millennium, it really mostly focused on the sexual interaction. But there's those other things that's still out there that present a danger.
People are so focused on. I think you know, God forbid if somebody is diagnosed with cancer or whatever it is. For the most part, I'm not saying that there aren't examples of it ever, but for the most part, nobody's ever like, well, how'd you get that cancer? Why was you over there, you know, doing that, you know, blah, blah, blah. But when it happens around HIV or AIDS, you know, people, again, assume it was sexual. Somebody could have gone to a tattoo party, you know, and, you know, had that experience and, you know, are now dealing with that. When really we should, I think, how you got it, when you got it, all of that is really not important. What is important is letting your partners know, making sure that you are having safe, protected sex, and that any procedure that you get that is involving any of those four fluids. I mean, I'm happy that you pointed that out because, you know, there are still some people that think if somebody has HIV or AIDS, if they touch them or cough on them or whatever it is.
Well, yeah, you know, it's really interesting if you're old enough, because we have some younger listeners to the program, if you're old enough to remember when AIDS was first on the scene, when folks first saw people with, you know, the sunken in face and it's Kaposi sarcoma, but it creates these lesions on the body. If you remember the film Philadelphia, how Tom Hanks' character had the lesions, that is caused by something called Kaposi sarcoma. So when that first was around, people saw people looking sick. It's like, whoa, I can't even touch you. Right. Oh, no, I'm out the door. Right. I'm not eating in your restaurant. I'm not going near you. I'm getting my kids away from you. You're seeing a similar panic with Ebola. Right. And the interesting thing about Ebola is, it is a little extra scary because from what I am learning, the modes of transmission include more body fluids than just the four that HIV have. So with Ebola, it is saliva. With Ebola, it is sweat. With HIV, it is not. And there are still people, even today, I've met and had conversations with that still believe I wouldn't eat after a person with HIV. I wouldn't hug a person with HIV. I wouldn't let them kiss me on the cheek. I don't want them near my children. There was a lady who once called me on the radio who was fearful of her mother who was in a convalescent home, I believe. And there was another elderly person in the home with HIV. She wanted to rush and take her mother out of this facility. Even though I'm like, unless your mother is coming in contact with this person's four body fluids, she doesn't have anything to worry about.
And one of the body fluids, I'm sure she didn't have anymore.
Whether she did or whether she didn't, I'm sure her mother was going to have absolutely nothing to do
with
any of her body fluids. And that's the thing is that I think it's so important when we talk about this subject, when we talk about the disease and the stigma that still remains, let's start with everybody being on the same page of same information.
Exactly.
Right, of course.
And what I was looking for really quick, we went to the Philadelphia AIDS Walk last week and I took a picture of...
A while ago.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a while ago.
Golly. I'm all messed up with
AIDS. Yeah, it's all right.
But what I was looking for is we took a picture what the AIDS Fund has done is they created this timeline, 1981 until it's over. And one of the statistics they had was talking about exactly what you're talking about. And the number blew my head off. It's like 56% or something of Americans wouldn't want their food prepared by somebody who has HIV. Like all these other numbers. Right. It's amazing.
Well, for me, it goes back to the larger umbrella of our health system, which is controlled by our government, you know, and it does take us to be informed on our end. Even if you're going out to a tattoo party, you got to do the research, you know, and knowing that that knowing your rights as a person who is would be positive and knowing that person writes, if you know someone who is positive, you know, but just being informed more than anything, even with the Ebola crisis, you know. Mm-hmm.
Be informed,
because when it first happened, you know, I was like, oh my God, it's coming to Philadelphia. But then, mm-hmm. you know, I started to really listen to the news and I'm mm-hmm. like, oh, this isn't really that contagious unless, like,
you have to be the doctor of the person, you know.
Like, so it's just really being informed and not allowing the media sometimes to let the theatrics of mm-hmm. the story take away from the details.
Yeah. 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 It's touching on your heartstrings yeah. and now you're breathing all out of breath. Like, right. Oh no.
But it's like getting more than one decision. Turn to a different news station, you know, mm-hmm. sometimes to also see how they're reporting a different right. story.
Yeah. And then yeah. Google it, you know, look it up. Look up the modes of transmission. Like, how contagious is this thing?
Right.
And be aware of where you're getting your information from. That's the other thing.
Exactly.
I know on Facebook and other social media platforms, there are a lot of fake news stories.
Right.
They're quote unquote satirical news.
Right, right.
And people will take them as fact and spread that around. And now all of a sudden you have a whole bunch of people believing that Ebola is airborne and that everybody has it wrong about
right.
HIV. And no, it actually is way more contagious than they're saying. And I'm like, all right, let's apply a little common sense
right.
to this. If it were as contagious as you say, many more people would have had it a long, long time ago.
Right.
Same thing with Ebola. This is not Ebola's first time at the rodeo.
Right.
We had an Ebola outbreak not in the United States, but in Africa,
uh-huh.
they had an Ebola outbreak in the 70s and 80s.
Right.
Didn't make it over here then. But if it were as contagious as you say, it would have been over
right.
here. So let's think about these things,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
you know, before we get upset.
And that's why, you know, I wish those news stories that you talked about, I wish the facts traveled as fast as some of those.
Fear.
The fear.
Exactly. And that's why I think, you know, the media, and I'm so happy that, you know, you on your show right now are
yeah.
talking about this.
Yeah.
If it can't scare people or drive ratings, I guess, the mm-hmm. media doesn't want to talk about it, or they don't want to talk about it in the sensible way. You know,
mm-hmm.
you have people out there inspiring fear, about Ebola, you know,
right.
and they have no information about Ebola at all. They're just scared.
And won't believe the people who do. I can say, on a personal note, I know at least one individual
listen,
who tried to battle me down about how contagious Ebola and HIV are. And I'm like, I do this work.
Right, right.
And you're going to tell me you don't do this
yeah.
work. And you're going to tell me how contagious it is. Then
yeah.
you should have it
yeah,
by
right.
now. If it's
right.
as contagious
right.
as you say.
As much as you talk about
you
it.
You should have it. But nobody wants to hear that. So, yeah. if you're just tuning in, having a little fun, but being very serious about a very serious subject, which is HIV and AIDS. We have two awesome guys here who are directing a play called You Gotta Eat Dirt Before You Die. It is a family drama mm-hmm. centered on how the family deals with the disease of HIV and AIDS, and also how they deal with cancer. Oh,
wow.
Heavy stuff.
Yeah, definitely.
Especially
yeah.
with,
the real life
with an
stuff.
Aging parent, and having to, that's tough,
yeah.
as you get older and you're creating your family and
mm-hmm.
doing what you're doing, to have an aging parent deal with cancer
yeah.
or any disease, that is also tough on the family as well. And
right.
there are
yeah.
so many really good, there's one character in the story that's really, carrying a lot of that weight. And there are so many
mm-hmm.
family members right now who are taking care of,
mm-hmm.
A family member who maybe has HIV or AIDS or cancer or whatever it is.
Or something.
And we can't forget
yeah.
those caretakers because the work they
yeah.
do is thankless.
Yeah.
And what they need just to stay sane.
Right.
Even there's judgment even in that,
right.
in the story, because that is a lot. That is a heavy burden. And what does one have to do when it's not you, but you are responsible for the one who is stricken with an ailment, an illness? What do you have to do to maintain your sanity?
I think you have to. I think that's another element in the play that is the disease that we didn't really talk about, but mental health,
mm-hmm.
Being able to know that you need time for yourself, You know, deep breaths. I'm a huge fan. Anyone that knows me, you know, I am always breathing. breath is life. Knowing that you I think sometimes when you have a parent or an elderly one, there's some guilt that comes along too, because you're like, man, you know, how can I be doing this? Yeah. You know, because I watched my grandfather die of cancer, unfortunately, a few years ago. And it was moments when it was like, how could we be out here living our lives and doing this when someone we love so much, you know? But knowing that, you know, at some level, you have to know that you can do all you can do, you know, and then you have to be able to atone and walk away from that, you know, but really taking care of yourself.
Yeah.
And living your life, I think, is the best thing that a caretaker can do.
Awesome. Yeah. And with that, we're going to say, hey, how can people find out about the production? Where can people go to find out about this awesome production? We've talked about it a bit. We've talked about all the testing events and the panel events that are going on around it. Where can people get the information?
So there are two really quick places that people can look. If people are interested in the panel, which is going to be World AIDS Day,
which is December 1st,
if they go right onto Temple University Paley's Library's website, they will find it there. But the other way that you can get all the information you need is to go right on Eventbrite and look up Eat Dirt Play. Or on Facebook, Eat Dirt Play.
You can actually Google Eat Dirt Play, and the first four options are all the options you need to find it.
Awesome.
Yeah, nothing to do with that. It's just people are talking about it. Awesome. Yeah, that's exciting.
It can't be any simpler than a Google search, right?
Yes. All the information you need
is right there on Google. Thank you guys so much. I really appreciate you coming out.
This is like a dream come true. Talking to Tiffany Baker.
I know.
Not on the radio.
Y'all are too much.
Mama, I love you.
Much love going out to you guys, Malcolm and Terrell. Thank you so much for coming in today. Much love to my offsite producer, Donovan West, and my in-studio producer, Larry. Thank you for all that you do. Stick around. Marriage Beyond the Vows is next. Bye-bye.
You're listening to Praise in the City with Tiffany Bacon on Praise 103.9, Philadelphia's Inspiration Station.